Are you getting the clear picture of the two narratives of COVID that are battling it out right now? There are two sides on the coronavirus, the China virus, the Wuhan virus, the COVID, the COVID-19, the SARS-CoV-2. They can't even get the name right. There are so many disagreements among so many people on this thing that it's just a jumble of chaos. However, if you're following closely, you get the picture that there's two sides. There's two narratives. The first narrative is the official narrative, that this is a deadly pandemic and we all need to be afraid. There's millions of people been diagnosed positive and hundreds of thousands of deaths and more deaths to come for sure if we don't follow every single thing the public health officials say we should follow. Never mind that the public health officials contradict themselves on a daily basis or that they flip-flopped on everything since the very beginning. Never mind that. Just whatever they say today, do that. That's one narrative. And then the other narrative is, we've never had the real facts on this thing. We've never really gotten the virus successfully isolated. The testing doesn't work. There are hundreds of thousands, millions possibly of false positives. The contact tracing is a failure. Masks are hurting more than they're helping. Lockdown has destroyed the economy. We need to end it right now. Children are not at risk and schools should open as normal. Those are the people on the other side of the narrative. And there's tons of experts on that side. It's just that if you're only following the mainstream media, you probably didn't get to see any of them at all. So today I have assembled some things. This is by no means comprehensive. And my examples are probably not even the best examples of each point that are out there. But I just want to go through because I want to show you what I see when I try to compare which side I want to believe. I want to believe the people that are most like me, and I want to believe the people that don't seem to have a profit motive. I want to believe the people who seem to genuinely care about their fellow men and women and who seem to be telling the truth. I want to follow the real science, but that is harder and harder to come by because science has been so compromised, all right? So when I look out, I see Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci and Tedros Adhanom and all these state governors and public health officials from all over the place seeming angry, seeming confused, seeming authoritarian, seeming to flip-flop, seeming to not know what they're talking about, and seeming to be in a position to benefit financially if we continue the pandemic and we ramp up the fear. Or then on the other side, I see people who are regular doctors, Nobel Prize winning virologists, handfuls of regular citizens, lawyers, and I see them struggling to find the truth and even struggling to find a place on the mainstream media. They keep getting censored. Mainstream media doesn't want to hear what they have to say. And so I feel that the people on TV with all the money, the billions in the bank, or the chance to get more control for their organization, like the World Health Organization or local public health units, I see them as unreliable. And I'm going to go through just some pickings I found to sort of prove my point. First, I want to start with just about a minute of Del Bigtree on his show, The High Wire.
This small group of people are telling you they have a plan for your future. And that plan is this. We will not let you get fully back to work until we have a vaccine 18 months from now. We don't care how many jobs we destroy or how much we level the economies of the world. And in order to make sure you're getting that vaccine, we're developing a microchip or a dye system that will be injected into you so we can track you. And we're talking to airlines to make sure that they don't let you on a plane unless you have your ID that has what? Your vaccination record. And we are following your cell phones to make sure that you're social distancing, something that we may leave in place for till the end of time. Hugging might be illegal. Kissing might be illegal. Your cell phones will help us know if that took place. And drones flying overhead that are checking your thermometer, your temperature. That's not a conspiracy anymore.
Del Bigtree, of course, has been kicked off YouTube because he isn't peddling the mainstream narrative, the WHO, Bill Gates narrative. So isn't that interesting? There's already got one example of how what Dell Bigtree just said is not allowed to be said by the big tech giants, YouTube, who kicked him off. All right, now let's fact check Dell. Some of the things he said were going to happen. Let's have a look. First of all, he mentioned needing some kind of immunity certificate to travel. Well, here's COVID pass right here. It says that they're going to be used in both the private sector and governments in over 15 countries, including Italy, Portugal, France, Panama, India, the US, Canada, Sweden, Spain, South Africa, Mexico, United Arab Emirates, and the Netherlands. So if you are in any of those countries, be prepared. COVID pass is being created as we speak. Dell Bigtree also mentioned about kids in school. And here is the chancellor of UT Knoxville saying that students who do not cooperate with contact tracing or filling out the self-isolation form could be expelled. Here's something from Canada. For the public schools, Waterloo District School Board in Ontario has unanimously agreed to that all students must be masked, and that includes four-year-old kindergartners. Next thing is a clip from, I believe it was on Tucker Carlson, a guy saying that school kids need to wear badges.
Mark Siegel joins us tonight.
Here's one other thing we have to do, sadly. No hugs, please. Now, if you look at this pin, Tucker, you'll see this pin looks like something you might remember. No smoking, please. Let's give our kids all of these pins. No hugs, please. Sadly. But I'm going to say this. With this pin or shirts, no hugs, please. Guess what's going to happen? We're going to get 26 candidates for a vaccine coming out into clinical trials right now. Vaccines are going to emerge. We're going to beat this thing. And then this goes in the garbage and we're all going to hug each other.
What are we going to do? Are we going to separate people out into, what do they call it in India? Untouchables? Are we making a class of untouchables unless we go along with everything that the public health officials say? I don't know about you, but I never voted for a public health official. So who the are they? And why do they have so much power? When those types of measures, sort of social pressure measures, fail, other areas are experimenting with extremely draconian measures. I'm sure this is just another way the globalists are kind of running their testing on different populations to see what works. Melbourne, Australia, authorities to use surveillance drones to catch people not wearing masks and also to find cars that are too far away from their homes. They are doing some severe draconian measures in particularly Victoria, Australia. And now in New Zealand, their crazy Prime Minister, Jacinda Ardern, has gone all the way back to the beginning. They have restarted their whole lockdown measures in the most severe form. Here is a little clip of her talking about people who don't want to get tested that are, maybe in quarantine. Listen to this.
I've got a number of questions about people refuse, you know, what do we do if someone refuses to be tested? Well, they can't now. If someone refuses in our facilities to be tested, they have to keep staying. So they won't be able to leave after 14 days. They have to stay on for another 14 days. So it's a pretty good incentive. You either get your tests done and make sure you're cleared, or we will keep you in a facility longer. So I think most people will look at that and say, I'll take the test.
Incentive, she calls it. Oh, that's nice. Flip play on the actual scenario where they've got people held in a facility and they won't let them out until they subject themselves to an invasion of their bodies. This is some kind of torture. This is a prisoner situation. This is a kidnapping situation that's going on in New Zealand. It's crazy. All right, so that's one section of this. Now I want to show you what a lot of regular people are saying. Things like this. The Sunday essay, the sum of cultural, free speech, health, and economic damage done by the COVID-19 caper. This was a good read. I'll just read you this synopsis here. Inhuman, unnatural behavior, mob obedience, the destruction of citizen health care, sovereign fiscal insolvency, unparalleled job losses. Is anyone still seriously trying to tell me that all this was done with the best intentions to save us from being wiped out by a virus that kills 0.0064% of us? Band together, thinking people. This is nonsense and we all know it. Indeed. This blog is from France, by the way, and I just want to read you a little bit of it. There is an overwhelming sense of obedience being the only moral choice for a responsible citizen. The diametric opposite of the normal French attitude, which is to ridicule every politician, evade as much tax as possible, and break every speed limit as a matter of course. One feels the change very keenly. The almost jingoistic tone of regulatory notices, unifier contre le virus, that means unite against the virus, the tut-tutting or stony silence if one says anything contrarian, and of course, the fear in those eyes above the mask. The habit of kissing on greeting and stopping for a gossip has disappeared, even when it's possible to show people with one chart that immunity is growing and deaths are falling sharply. They shrug and say, il faut rester prudent, we must remain on our guard. 3 months ago, the obligatory wearing of masks in the street was being hotly debated in the media and largely opposed in op-eds. Today, large areas of Paris have adopted that ridiculous obligation without a murmur, despite the now massively quantified data proving that management drugs are highly effective at dealing with the infected, and 85% of the population has only the tiniest chance of dying from COVID. There is a real-life lesson I have learned over the last 5 years, that friends, from normal circumstances, are largely useless as comrades when malign forces have made them scared. Brexit and COVID-19 did that. One has to seek out new colleagues capable, as Kipling put it, of keeping your head when others are losing theirs. And this is what we're seeing here, but it's not by accident. And some of our friends and family still may be saved if only we can break through the censorship regime and the lying machine that is the mainstream media. See, they are putting highly unethical, highly compromised people with conflicts of interest out in front of the world as if they are the only voice speaking on this matter. A lot of people don't even know that there are contrarian voices out there or other options like hydroxychloroquine or other things that I can't even talk about because they will pull the video down, even if I just say the words, which has happened. My video on Africa, which got a great warm review, it's been pulled by YouTube because it mentions a cure that a country in that continent has come up with. It's absolutely outrageous, the level of censorship against this, and it's instant. We're going to talk about more of them in a second. There are people posting things on Twitter that if you catch them in time before they're totally censored, and if you collect them, you can make a strong case for everything I talked about before, the tests not working, the amount of false positives, the death stats being stacked, the treatments that are not being allowed to see the light of day. And here we have Wolfgang Wodarg, who is an expert on virology and pandemics and detecting flus and other viruses. Here's a graphic from him showing that the false positive rate is very high. And yet they're still using these PCR tests. I was going to do a lot more on PCR tests in this video, but I think I might leave it completely separate for now and just continue to show you in Germany as well. There's 500 doctors and scientists and politicians, experts coming together to say that they have a lot of evidence that it's a fake story all over the world. COVID, that is. Fake story, not fake virus. Fake story that, like I just said, all of those things about it are being misreported or they're being censored. The general public is being led down a garden path that is not true. And these 500 people are coming together in Germany to put together a proper inquiry about it. Here's Wolfgang Wodarg here. And just to show you, This is from 2010 in Forbes magazine. Why the WHO faked a pandemic. They faked a pandemic. I think it's the swine flu. And Wodarg was one of the people who called that out at the time. And it's not the only one. There's been other pseudo-pandemics. I think I have a screen grab for you in a minute. Now, there are people putting together all of the science they can find to prove that masks don't work as well. And Dennis Rancour has taken the time and put together a huge collection of the science that shows that masks don't work against this sort of virus. And there's also a lot of evidence that the masks can be harmful to your health with breathing in too much CO2 and the germs collecting on them and various other things, skin conditions, probably teeth problems, lung infections, lots of things. Where's the mainstream media on this? Why are you not hearing it? After a while, you get to understand there is an agenda here. The big money people, the people you always see on the news, like Bill Gates, but many, many more, heads of pharma companies, heads of other foundations, and investors galore, they built their next year's to 5 years investment on COVID or another pandemic. That's where they've put all their money. All their chips are in on pandemic. And if this thing doesn't keep going, if they can't convince the public to be scared, buy the masks, take the vaccines, stay indoors, let them put in their curriculum they've built for at-home learning, let them put in their telehealth things for at-home healthcare, let them put in their supply chains for their online delivery things and online retailing. If we don't let them finish that plan, they're going to lose a lot of money. And really, honestly, that's what most of this is about. The most sinister, evil part of it, of course, is that they actually want to go through with the vaccination plan. On a vaccine they have skipped the normal testing protocols for, a brand new type of vaccine that could risk changing our DNA forever. And on down the line, too, to our children. And there's much more about the vaccines, but I won't get into it right now. In spite of all of their fear-mongering, oh, by the way, I will put links to all this and everything else down in the description box if you want to go there and see the scientific studies for yourself. Okay, where was I? In spite of the fear-mongering, the censorship, the social media, and in-person mobbing, like that one gentleman from France said, people roll their eyes at you. People think you're a crank. People get angry with you that you're not going along. You dare not be a contrarian about this in public. There are prices to pay. But I say pay them. Totally worth it. In spite of all of that they've tried, they have not managed to shut us all up. We keep fighting. And in fact, the crowd size that is fighting is getting bigger every day. So here's a guy who's actually calls himself a bioethicist. Here's his proposed solution to us horrible anti-maskers, anti-vaxxers, contrarians, people who do not believe the hype. Here's his solution for us. Morality pills. The author of the piece is Parker Crutchfield. And look what he says here. My research in bioethics focuses on questions like how to induce those who are non-cooperative to get on board with doing what's best for the public good. Really? Really? So now courses in bioethics include specialties in how to force people to do what they don't want to do? I'm old enough to remember when that would be considered highly unethical. But Parker Crutchfield here is an expert, so it must be ethical, right? He says, to me it seems that the problem of coronavirus defectors could be solved by moral enhancement. Like receiving a vaccine to beef up your immune system, people could take a substance to boost their cooperative, pro-social behavior. Could a psychoactive pill be the solution to the pandemic? It's a far-out proposal that's bound to be controversial, but one I believe is worth at least considering, given the importance of social cooperation in the struggle to get COVID under control. So you see, part of the thing is, if we don't make COVID sound huge and terrifying, then we can't justify experimenting on people to see whether a pill can make them more cooperative. Well, of course it can. I think psych wards have been doing this for a really long time, haven't they? And how far are we from that day when they say, if you're an anti-masker, you're clearly insane, and they'll just put us in the psych ward, in the mental hospital. It's been done in history, right? We need everyone to grow a pair so that there's obvious crowds of people saying out loud, you guys don't know what you're talking about, and I'm not going to go into a virtual prison for a virus that kills almost nobody. All right, I'm ranting a bit. By the way, the pill thing, it's been proposed before. Here's Germany floating it in 2017. Oxytocin-enforced norm compliance reduces xenophobic outgroup rejection. Translation, they want to give you pills or some kind of hormone to make you like refugees and illegal migrants more, to make you be more friendly to them. So I don't know if they ever did it. I mean, imagine. I don't know if they did it. Speaking also of what migrants and immigrants, how these people cynically use people coming into the country, listen to this crazy woman. Her name's Carol Baker.
The battle is being fought one family, one physician, one health center. That's why we're doing as well as we are. We're talking about the minority and strategies against the minority. So I have the solution. Every study published in the last 5 years, when you look at vaccine refusers, I'm not talking about, well, hesitants, most of them we can talk into coming to terms, but refusers. We'll just get rid of all the whites in the United States, because Houston is the most diverse city in the entire United States. There are 7 Asian languages spoken in that city. I've been a minority for more than 20 years in the city of Houston. The majority is, we call, Hispanic. That is not a race or an ethnicity. That is a political designation. But a lot of them are from Central, South America, Mexico. Guess who wants to get vaccinated the most? Immigrants.
Some people say she was joking. I don't know. She just sounded drunk to me, so it's hard to tell, and I don't know her. But that was at a professional conference. She's supposedly a respected, leftist. I don't remember what her job is. But something to do with the highfalutin, high society progressives. Speaking of that type, and bioethics, remember Christine Grady? Maybe you've never met her. She's head of bioethics and head of the section on human subjects research at the National Institute of Health. And her husband just so happens to be Anthony Fauci. Bioethicist, head of human subjects research, is married to the coronavirus task force guy who wants a vaccine that has never been tested or tried before. And they're experimenting on humans without doing the animal trials first. Gee, I wonder if this relationship came in handy at all. And it probably came in handy to this guy, too. Christine Grady, head of bioethics, says that she has no conflicts of interest to declare when she gives a speech and a talk, Framework for the Ethics of Research with Human Subjects. But we just showed you that she actually does have conflicts of interest in that department. How ethical is that? Not a good start. Not an auspicious start for somebody who's supposedly focused on ethics to make that false claim. And Christine Grady partnered with Ezekiel Emanuel on several papers, but here's one of them, for Paradigms of Clinical Research and Research Oversight. Ezekiel Emanuel was Obama's health rationer in chief. And he recently co-wrote this paper, Fair Allocation of Scarce Medical Resources in the Time of COVID-19. Remember he got accused of being wanting death panels for old people? And everybody laughed, ha ha, you crazy conspiracy theorist, far right-wing nut job saying that he wants to ration care. Well, listen to what he said in this paper about who to prioritize in COVID-19. Because maximizing benefits is paramount in a pandemic, we believe that removing a patient from a ventilator or an ICU bed to provide it to others in need is also justifiable, and that patients should be made aware of this possibility at admission. Undoubtedly, withdrawing ventilators or ICU support from patients who arrived earlier to save those with better prognosis will be extremely psychologically traumatic for clinicians, and some clinicians might refuse to do so. However, many guidelines agree that the decision to withdraw a scarce resource to save others is not an act of killing and does not require the patient's consent. We agree with the guidelines that this is the ethical thing to do. That's rationing care. That's disgusting. Right, this kind of leads me to New York's Governor Cuomo putting COVID-positive patients who are supposedly recovering into nursing homes with vulnerable population. Gee, does that work right along with Ezekiel Emanuel's desire to preserve resources for, you know, people with longer life years? It does to me. I mean, I don't think Ezekiel Emanuel cried too many tears over this situation where Chris Cuomo put these people in and had something like 6,600 deaths in the nursing home. And this article from the other day says that it could be a significant undercount of how many people died in the care homes. Sad, sick, but that's the supposed ethics. That's the ethics paradigm that Fauci and his wife, Christine Grady, and Ezekiel Emanuel and these experts and that guy from the Take the Pill, a morality pill, this is their morality. This is the ethical framework we're subject to. And I think we see it reflected everywhere with the flippancy of so many supposed healthcare professionals. Just one more thing about the NIH and Christine Grady and Dr. Fauci. This is from June 15th, 2020. U.S. National Institutes of Health fire 54 researchers as ongoing investigation reveals 93% failed to disclose links to Chinese Communist Party. And it wasn't really a small failure to disclose. The average foreign financial investment, either in the form of direct compensation or research grants, was $678,000. So that's a lot of unethical behavior, a lot of compromised individuals at the NIH. So when you get that many compromised individuals in one organization, do you think it's maybe easier to set guidelines that allow people to be taken off ventilators without their permission or consent? I do. I think it all goes to the same cesspool, the same warped ideological thinking. This is from 2017. NIH lifts 3-year ban of funding on risky virus studies. Concerns over the so-called gain-of-function studies that make pathogens more potent or likely to spread in people erupted in 2011. And so they put a moratorium on it. They banned it, actually. And for some reason, December 19th, 2017, they lifted that ban. And, well, they're funding coronavirus research in Wuhan. They only canceled it April 28th, 2020. And by the way, look at this. This is an update to this story. Last week, 77 Nobel laureates and 31 scientific societies separately sent letters to NIH Director Francis Collins criticizing the decision to terminate the grant and urging that it be reviewed. There's a lot of people who, in my opinion, have their brains upside down inside their heads, or at least their souls upside down, or maybe their souls are missing. I don't know. Just look how the mainstream press handles this, though. Past coronavirus research grants are being used to smear Anthony Fauci. Oh no, it's not like it's true. Why don't we discuss whether it's true or not and whether it's good or not? Why are we saying anything about Anthony Fauci and whether it's being used to smear? Is it true? And should we be doing it? Let's grow up. Okay, but they don't have truth on their side. If they had truth on their side, they wouldn't need to censor their opposition. They wouldn't need to be so deceptive about parceling out information. They would just give it all out. We would debate all sides. They would put it plainly instead of appealing to emotion. Oh, yes, I wanted to talk about this. In this terrible paper by these horrible people, they mention informed consent as a paradigm that we've already passed through, and now we are in something called a collaborative partnership and communitarianism, where basically they guilt you into doing what is good for the group rather than what is good for yourself. That's what they're trying to do to all of us right now, and it's not working, if you haven't noticed. It's working on some people. It's really not working on others. But they mentioned that we've just left the paradigm of informed consent, and I agree that informed consent is much better than what we've got right now. But informed consent can also be kind of flipped on its head and used to hide what's really going on. Because according to the media right now, they're informing us, but they're not telling us the full story. And if these cult leaders, these smooth operators, if they can convince you to, say, be a guinea pig for a really dangerous new vaccine, if you volunteer, then that's consent. So informed consent, to me, is a problem. It's a phrase with problems that we have to really think about. And I want to show you this clip of Bill Gates.
But you don't have a choice. People act like you have a choice. People don't feel like going to the stadium when they might get infected. You know, it's not the government who's saying, okay, just ignore this disease. And, you know, people are deeply affected by seeing these deaths, by knowing they could be part of the transmission chain, and, you know, old people, their parents, their grandparents could be affected by this. And so you don't, you know, you don't get to say, ignore what's going on here. There will be the ability, particularly in rich countries, to open up if things are done well over the next few months. But for the world at large, normalcy only returns when we've largely vaccinated the entire global population. And
so where does informed consent come in here? Where does informed consent come in with that vaccine if he admits that most people are too scared or too shamed or too guilty to go out and enjoy their lives as normal? And the only relief from that will be a vaccine. Is that informed consent? See how they flip it around? Bill Gates also warns us that this is just pandemic number one. We don't seem to be behaving during this one, but wait for number two. We'll behave then. Listen.
And so they moved a lot faster. So we, you know, we'll have to prepare for the next one. That, you know, I'd say is will get attention this time.
That
most of the work we're going to do to be ready for pandemic two, I call this pandemic one.
Super creepy when you consider the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board, which was co-sponsored by the World Bank and the World Health Organization, put this document out in late 2019. And here's what they had to say. Progress indicators by September 2020. They want the United Nations, including the WHO, the WHO, to conduct at least two system-wide training and simulation exercises, including one for covering the deliberate release of a lethal respiratory pathogen. So add that together with Bill Gates and his, I call this pandemic number one. There's going to be pandemic number two. Yeah, by September 2020. Tick-tock, it's coming. How are you getting the feeling that they're going to ramp it up again? Well, we're seeing the increased lockdowns. We're hearing rumblings of a new strain. By the way, the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board here that put this together, guess who's on the board? Anthony Fauci. And people from Bill and Melinda Gates, the Wellcome Trust. This guy is China's CDC. Let's replace that one lady with Christine Grady. And here's some usual suspects for you. These guys, pictured here, make tons of money and gain tons of control if the pandemics go through. I'm noticing some patterns. Where are we ever going to get the truth if those guys all know each other, work together, all get have investments in the pandemic and all approve each other's work. And well, we can get it still through social media and through all the good people, the real doctors, the real experts who are not in their little club and who do not have huge financial stakes in the pandemic or the drugs and vaccines that are new. Like these doctors who came together, they were talking about their successful treatment of patients with something I'm not allowed to talk about. They were talking about it. This video went super viral, especially when this one female doctor back here, and she deserves to be heard. All of these doctors spoke out, and for a cheap, readily available treatment. What does cheap and readily available mean? It means that these guys and their partners elsewhere don't get to make billions off it, right? That's why it's censored. Trump actually tweeted this video of these people speaking, and Twitter took it down because it goes against what the WHO says. The president of the United States wanted to share these doctors who were just normal doctors sharing their stories of their patients and the success with an easy, readily available, cheap medicine. And these guys, with their partners in the media and big tech, they cannot allow that to happen. They don't want us to know. So who do you trust more? Do you trust the sketchy, flip-flopping words of people like Bill Gates, who is not in any way a medical professional? Or do you trust the people with nothing to gain and actually everything to lose by speaking out about their real-life experience? What makes more sense? This doctor was fired, and many people who have spoken out have been censured, fired, berated, chased off campuses, deplatformed, etc. This is getting pretty long, but I want to cover the rest of the slides that I have. The ethical public health people here and their idea of informed consent. Well, let's keep in mind that Gates and the vaccine manufacturers and the Wellcome Trust and a whole bunch of them, they carry out their experiments in the developing world, Africa largely, but also in other countries, Thailand, Pakistan, all over the place. And they work a lot with refugees. Get a load of this story. Biometric data is increasingly popular in aid work, but critics say it puts refugees at risk because they're having to be dependent on these tech innovations, some of which go along with vaccines. They're not in the vaccine, but they go along with the vaccine. You enter your biometric data as you get the vaccine, and then you're on their system. And what they do is they ration then to you. If you have this biometric record, they can give you cash assistance. They can give you food. I know that in one village in Thailand, I couldn't find the story. I believe it was Thailand, one refugee encampment. The only way you could purchase food was through your digital currency. It was either a card or some biometric scan, like your iris or something. So you had to, it was the only way to get food. That is not really consent. And how do we know how well informed they are? Next, ID 2020 and partners launch program to provide digital ID with vaccines. You might be saying to yourself, oh yeah, maybe that happens in refugee camps, but it's not going to happen in the United States. It's already happening, as this story shows you, in Austin, the city of Austin, and they are working together with homeless people and the service providers to engage with them to develop a blockchain-enabled digital identity platform called MyPass to empower homeless people with their own identity data. How sick is that? Unbelievable. And this is from 2019, so yes, they've run their pilot programs in the United States. I notice here, March 26, 2020, so quite a while after the initial publication. It says, this post was updated to clarify that the program is intended to allow people to receive vaccination and prove they have received it, not to track individuals as claimed by some conspiracy theorists. Well, I don't know. This doesn't say anything about vaccination right here. Nothing. They don't say they're tying it to vaccination. They're just saying they want to empower them with their own identity data. So even their correction and ostensible defense of themselves doesn't make any sense. They just add it and use the word conspiracy theorist. What do you think this means? Do I have to be a conspiracy theorist, or am I allowed to read this literally? Identity data is outside of individual control. Am I allowed to take that literally? By the way, of course, ID 2020 is a Bill Gates venture, largely. Just a little more. Bill Gates has partnered with MasterCard for a wellness pass. This was in December 2018. This partnership aims to leverage state-of-the-art technology by bringing the smart into traditional immunization. They're going to lead the way towards a world beyond cash. Keep in mind, they've written this right here, but me reporting it makes me a crazy right-wing conspiracy theorist, tinfoil hat-wearing lunatic. It's okay that they wrote it down. It's just not okay for me to read it to you. Here they are. Fact check. Bill Gates is not planning to microchip the world through a COVID-19 vaccine. What it says here is, it is possible that the conspiracy theory partly originated from a December study published by a team at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. The study was funded in part by Bill and Melinda Gates. The team had developed an approach to encode medical history on a patient by including a small amount of dye with the vaccine. The dye, which would be invisible to the naked eye, but observable through a specialized cell phone app using infrared light, would keep a record of a child's vaccines. The quantum dot dye technology is not a microchip or human implantable capsule, and to my knowledge, there are no plans to use this for coronavirus. Well, you see what they did? This is a permanent record of a child's vaccines that is implantable onto a patient, but it stays with the patient forever, and it's only visible with a special cell phone app. So how is that significantly different from a microchip? It isn't, but that's what fact checkers do. They take a tiny detail and they say it negates the whole argument when really it doesn't. And most people fall for it. Here's a picture of it, by the way. Here's what it looks like. There's the little plate with the dye. They push it into your skin. It goes into your skin and it leaves the traceable dye there. Here's the cell phone accessing it. So when they say, Bill Gates is not planning to microchip the world through COVID-19, but he is planning on digitally tattooing the world. Kind of the same thing. Here's them saying that Bill Gates is just upset about the conspiracy theorists. We need to go away because it's so dangerous to his program. And what is his program? Well, he says, it's strange. They take the fact that I'm involved with vaccines and they just reverse it. So instead of giving money to save lives, I'm making money to get rid of lives. Bill Gates says that's a conspiracy theory. Well, let's hear from a YouTuber that I just discovered who put together a wonderful presentation on that whole thing right there. Is Bill Gates and Melinda Gates, are they trying to get rid of people? Specifically African people?
Aha to Bill and me when we got into this work, as we asked ourselves, of course, the same hard-nosed question you'd ask, which is, if you get into this work and you start to save these children, will women just keep overpopulating the world?
Now, there's way more to that video than I just showed you, but out of respect for her, I won't take too much more. I will recommend you go over and watch the whole thing. She's been keeping a particularly close eye on this, and I'd say, Bill, there's a case to be made that you're trying to get rid of lives. All right, wrapping up. Yeah, I should show you this. See, some of us are never going to be convinced to get this vaccine, but they want to convince us, as many of us as possible. So Yale has been looking into this. COVID-19 vaccine messaging, part one. They want to talk people in to getting the vaccine. And here's how they're going to try to do it. With a control message, with a baseline message, with a personal freedom message, an economic freedom message, self-interest message, community interest message, economic benefit message, guilt message, embarrassment message, anger message, trust in science message, and not bravery message. Now, I have no idea what the not bravery message is. I couldn't see this whole study. But isn't it interesting how many angles of approach they're going to try to use? I particularly love that they're going to use guilt and embarrassment. That one seems highly effective for a lot of people, because when I talk to people about the mask wearing, they say they don't want any confrontation. They just don't want it. That's the main reason, even if they don't believe in the masking. They're doing it because they are afraid of being embarrassed or shamed. Sick. But don't worry. Remember, they might put together a morality pill. And then Yale study just becomes irrelevant. The messaging will be unnecessary because we'll all just happily roll up our sleeves and get the vaccine and wear the masks and float around on a cloud. All right. I mean, some of the characters featured here are just broken. To me, they're broken inside if they can do this. Like Del Bigtree said.
This small group of people are telling you they have a plan for your future.
We can't let them. We cannot let them do it. All right. Listen, before I stop talking, I have one more thing I want to say about your letters. I am going to be doing a BitChute exclusive. I'm uploading it tomorrow to BitChute. Letters from August. So go over there and subscribe to me so you won't miss it. I will put the link to that in the description box for you, along with my paypal.me if you'd like to make a financial contribution. I thank everyone from the bottom of my heart who has already done so. So thank you. If you want to send me something through the mail, you can do that. My P.O. Box address is on my website, amazingpolly.net, on the contact page. If you do send a check, then please make it out to Polly Media. God bless you, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Until next time, peace out.